Thanks for listening to Palmetto State Racket, the official podcast of USTA South Carolina. For more information on tennis in South Carolina, please visit sctennis.com.
Hi everyone, this is Jonathan Braden with the Palmetto State Racket. We have another special guest here today, Bob Kiewit, the USTA South Carolina Official of the Year and the USTA Southern Section Official of the Year as well. A big year for Bob, so welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Bob, what does an official do in tennis then? For people who might not be as familiar with it, what's the role?
Okay, the main purpose of the official is to ensure that play is fair, that all the rules of tennis are adhered to, and that the outcome of the match is determined by the play of the players and not other reasons.
Mm-hmm. So when do you, like in a South Carolina match or tournament, when does the official get involved? When would you get involved?
Well, the officials get involved about 30 minutes to 45 minutes before the first match starts. Make sure that the nets are at the proper tension and height and the single sticks are in position. You actually greet the players, if you possibly can, at the net when they arrive at the court, getting ready to play. You do the coin toss and make sure that they understand what the scoring format is for that particular match. And then you time their warm-up. And once the warm-up is complete, they start the match. And in the ideal situation, that's the last you ever see or hear of those players. It's only if something appears to be going wrong or is questionable that you might pay a closer attention to that particular court. You can officiate with your ears almost as much as you can with your eyes because you can hear play in the background. Typically as an official, especially for juniors, you'll have six or eight different courts that you're trying to monitor at the same time, so that the ears do come become important. But in the ideal match, that's all there is to it. Maybe if you happen to be at the court when they finish, tell them nice match, fellas or gals, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm. And or what scenarios would you maybe see those players again or have to come back to the court and offer your wisdom, of course?
Okay. Anytime they have a dispute or a question on court, they can call for an official. They can request an official. And it may be something as simple as clarifying a rule, like whose call was that? If you actually saw a questionable point, you could make a determination, but you would be there to either try to control behavior and conduct if they were getting loud and noisy and that kind of thing, or to clarify a rule and then sometimes make a decision on what the outcome of a particular dispute should be. Once again, based on the rules of tennis and trying to make sure that the match is played fairly and that both players get the same benefit.
Mm-hmm. How do you, what's the procedure or how do you handle disputes? Like how does a strong official handle a dispute between some players and what would you not recommend? What's the proper way, I guess, to handle it?
Well, the first thing is if you don't know what happened, you don't know what happened. And so that makes it extremely difficult to make a judgment. And the technique I use is to get both players right at the net so we're not screaming from the baseline at each other. And I'll usually start with whoever the server was for that particular point, ask them what the score was when they got ready to serve, and then what their interpretation of what just happened is. And the other player is going to want to interrupt, but I know, you know, you'll get your turn. So I try to get the whoever the server was to tell me everything it was about the point and what his position is on the issue. And then you get that same opportunity to the other player. And sometimes just that discussion, they'll, oh, yeah, you know, that's right, and they'll settle it themselves. Sometimes it's a matter of whose call is it, especially if it's a call that's out that the other player is questioning. If you did not see it, then the person whose call it was, that's the call that it's going to be, and it's just too bad that it happened that way. One of them made a mistake. I absolutely forbid the word cheat. You'll hear it sometimes from players or even parents. And in the 15 years or so that I've been doing it, there may have been one or two cases of cheating, but there have been hundreds of honest mistakes. And so I treat everything as an honest mistake. And you just say to them, well, one of you made a mistake. I don't know which one it is. But by rule, this is what the resolution of that issue is going to be. And then you try to stay near that court for at least the next couple of games. First of all, to give them time to settle down and get back to business. And secondly, just to make sure that there's no retaliation or it doesn't get out of hand. So it's that's when you'd pay particular attention to that particular court.
Mm-hmm. How did you get into being an official to begin with? How did you get into tennis?
Well, I played tennis and played at Park Lane, and that's where I started. Like I said, the Southern 12s were there, and I just worked as a volunteer, checking the kids in on Friday, and then as a court monitor over the weekend. And then just about the time I retired was the same time that there was greater emphasis being placed on having certified officials rather than just monitors. And so I went ahead and at that time took the provisional exam, which is just very basic rules. And then you were kind of on your own to go somewhere and learn something. It was not really structured, but there was a lot of mentoring of people, you know, newcomers coming along. That's evolved into a more formal process. Today, if someone wants to become an official, they still have to take that provisional exam, which is a fairly simple exam. Probably anybody that's a club player or a just, you know, a novice player knows those rules, basic scoring and that sort of thing. You also have to participate in the South Carolina Mentors Program, where the new provisional official will be matched up with an experienced official to try and find them opportunities to shadow experienced officials in real situations, at actual tournaments. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of competencies that are associated with being a good official, and both the provisional and the mentor are aware of what those are, and they try and address all those situations and all those rules during this shadowing process. Anybody that wants to become official must also pass a background check, be a member of USTA, and eventually establish a personal account in the USTA's management system called Nucula. And then from there, it's just a matter of finding opportunities to work.
Mm-hmm. And you have obviously achieved success in this, and you've been doing it for a few years. How have you seen the sportsmanship or the number of incidents come up or change throughout the time that you have been at this?
Frankly, I haven't seen a huge change, at least not as much as you would expect, because the junior tennis has become a very competitive sport, much more so competitive than it was 15 years ago. It was competitive then, but now you have a lot of kids looking for college scholarships and a lot of parents you know, putting a lot of money into coaches and travel. It's not a cheap sport to participate in these tournaments. And so you would anticipate a higher sense of urgency or whatever on the part of both parents and players. And you get that from time to time, but I can remember it back at the Southern 12s as a monitor as well, where some parents, particularly at the age level of 12, are taking this much too seriously. But for the most part, the kids are great, the parents are great. It's a good sport, and good kids are playing the sport.
Mm-hmm. What does that look like when a parent or a kid is taking it too seriously? It's a rare person, but what does it look like?
Well, the first thing you notice is that at the end of every point, the player looks to the bench at the parent. And you know right just from that they're very aware and very conscious that the parent is there. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're overly involved, but that's an indication that they might be. Mm-hmm. There are a number of players and parents who have both told me, you know, I can't be there at the court when he's playing or she's playing. You know, just my presence right at the court makes them too nervous. So they'll be two or three courts away, but still watching that match. I think that's really the number one indication is you can tell just by at the end of every point the interaction visually between the parent and the player.
Is the parent like looking, or is the child looking up for approval, or like just looking to make eye contact, or what? What's that?
Well, either looking for approval or looking in fear, or just that extreme consciousness or awareness of the presence of the parent there, I think puts a little undue pressure on the kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my sense. That may be wrong. I'm not a psychologist by trade, but that's my sense of it.
Mm-hmm. And you say junior tennis has gotten more competitive. You're talking like that 13 to 18, 10 to 18 range? Are you talking 10 and under as well? Or
I'm talking at all levels. There are 10-year-old kids today that play much better than 12-year-old kids did 15 years ago. And there are a lot of players. You know, South Carolina is not a huge state, but I think if we went and looked at all of the in-state college tennis rosters, we'd find 30 or 40 at least South Carolina kids playing. Maybe, you know, they're not all playing for Clemson and USC, but they're playing for Newberry, they're playing for Furman, they're playing for Wofford, they're playing for Presbyterian. You know, they're all over the place. And I'm not sure we had that many of that level of player 15 years ago.